As we know, on Hanukkah, we fight the very attractive philosophy and the lifestyle and the ideology of what the Greeks represented. And I think that this is something that was not an issue only from thousands of years ago, but it continues to be an issue that presents itself in our generation as well. And we think about the culture and the society and the values that have seeped into our community. And let us make no mistake, they have seeped into our community. You look around and you see in modern society, it seems to be that winning is everything at the expense of all moral code and all decency and goodness in the world. And yet you look in Pirkei Avos, what we are taught is considered to be the value of Jewish life. Ezehu mechubad, who is considered one who is respected? Hamechabed es habrios, somebody who knows how to share the spotlight. Someone who believes that winning is not everything. Someone who believes that, yes, I do celebrate the successes of others and I'm willing to be happy when they have something good in their lives. It's just one example of so many of culture and civilization and society that have really shaped our way of thinking as well. So I thought that this was an opportunity for us to think about it, because here we are. We're in a Gullus mentality, and even though the story of Hanukkah happened in Eretz Yisrael and it was the struggle for civilization and it was the struggle for our set of laws and our set of values, but here we are in America, outside of Eretz Yisrael, struggling with the same thing. And this is not a one-generational problem. This is a problem that we continue to confront and continue to have difficulty really overcoming. So let us talk a little bit about it. The Ramchal, as we know, one of the greatest Jewish philosophers in the 1700s, in his Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, talks about the importance of a person knowing how to spend time alone. You ever look at people, especially members of my generation? And I know we're all in the same generation here, but let's pretend that we weren't. If you think about Generation Z or wherever we're up to, and you watch that person, when you put them alone in a car for a half an hour, they literally do not know what to do with themselves, cannot sit for a half a minute and just think for themselves. You ever watch? Am I the only one that's had this experience? Nobody, I'm getting a lot of blank faces. But people are just not comfortable with themselves. And the ability to spend time alone, to detach and to disconnect and to just think for myself is a rarity today. So the Ramchal talks about it and he says, V'yakar min hakol, he says, more important than anything else is the ability to have this time of hispodidus, to have an opportunity to just sit alone and to think for myself. Ki kemosha meser me'enav in yanei ha'olam. When I do that and I unwind and I separate and detach myself from all that's going on in the world, kein mavir chemdasam milibo. So too, I purge myself of the incessant urge and the impulse that other people make me feel all the time. Right? If I'm on social media, I don't know how many people are on social media here. If you're on Twitter or you're on Facebook, and you're watching the dinners that everyone else is serving, and you're feeling bad about what it is that you're doing in your own home, it's nonsense, because you know it's not reality. It's hard to see it, because all you're looking at is a fake image of someone's life that's not the reality of what life is, and we know it's true. So you know what? Get off of Twitter. I've met with so many younger members of our community who become depressed over everything they see on social media outlets. And the answer is, get off of those outlets and stop looking at everyone else and learn how to be by yourself and how to appreciate your own life and learn how to look at the blessings that your own life has without everyone else's involvement and without their perspectives. You don't need to hear from everybody else. You don't need to look at what they had for dinner. And says the Mesilas Yesharim, when I have the ability to unwind and to detach myself a little bit, it gives me the ability also to take out chemdasa melibo, to take out the incessant urges to be like other people. If I don't know what they're doing, I don't want to be like them. He says that all the great Nevi'im, Eliyahu Hanavi, Elisha Hanavi, and so many others, made sure that they used to spend time on the top of a mountain. Why? We read about Eliyahu Bahara Carmel. Why did they spend time on the top of a mountain? He says, because you have the ability to disconnect. You have the ability to think, to have clarity of mind, to have clarity of vision. And he says that this is what every great person since that time has made a point to do as well. To make space for themselves, to be able to have an opportunity to think, to have an opportunity to be alone. Look at the next paragraph. However, although the Ramchal writes that this is very important, that we have the opportunity and the ability to be alone, he says, like every good thing in life, it has to be with a balance and with a moderation. Never to go to the extreme in either direction. This is always the balance that we need to strike every time we're involved in anything. And the Ramchal writes that we have to qualify that. B'tnai, shelo yate gamaze al k'tzeh ha'acher. We cannot be radical. We cannot go to the extreme and be people that have no social interactions at all. Obviously, that would not be appropriate at all. As the Gemara says, la'olam tehedaito shel adam u'reves im habrios, ela yischaber ha'adam im atovim zman ma, shemitztarech lo lilmod o leparnasa, v'yisbodeid achar kach lehidavik be'elokav lehasig darke ha'yosher ve'avodah ha'amitis. Says the Ramchal, it's important that we strengthen both of those muscles. On the one hand, the ability to be comfortable in our own skin, to think for ourselves, to have the ability to spend time alone and not be uncomfortable with that reality, while at the same time also having the ability to know in moderation how to be a community person, how to be someone who is me'uravim habrios, how to be a person who is connected with other people, influencing other people, influenced by other people in the appropriate ways. And that balance is so important. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz quotes something from a sefer in the 1700s. The sefer is called the Kuntros HaSfekos, something that nobody here has ever read, I assume. But in the introduction to that sefer, he writes the following. And he says, imagine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would invite a person up to heaven and would give the ability for that person to experience what life is like in a day of God. What would that experience look like? To understand the inner workings of how the world operates and to understand and appreciate why certain things are going on. But imagine there would be one stipulation in that invitation, and that would be no pictures, no videos, no cell phones, no telling anybody what you saw and what you experienced. Would you still want to go? Would you still want to go? And he says, of course, any thinking person would say, yes, of course I still want to go. But it would definitely bother that person that they're not allowed to share that experience. There's something natural about our tendency to want to share, to want to talk to other people, to want to connect, and to share our experiences with others. It's a part of who we are. We're all naturally social beings, and we enjoy having the presence of other people in our lives and their perspectives and collaborating with them. That's part of what it is in the human condition, in the human experience. And that's why having this ability to have hispodidus is something that's very hard. While at the same time, going to the extreme and oversharing on social media and reading everything about everyone and every article that has no relevance to my life is also unhealthy. So that's the balance that we always need to strike. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, in the sixth parak, let's see here number gimel. Derech b'riyaso shel ha'adam. It is basic human nature for a person, lios nimshach b'deosav uv'maisav, for a person to be drawn, affected, and influenced, achareya v'chaverav, after his friends, after his neighbors, and his colleagues. V'noeg b'mineg anshe medinaso. And if you stick around in a community long enough, you begin to behave like them. And you begin to develop attitudes, and your whole demeanor will be in line with the understandings and the perspectives of your community. Lefikach, and therefore the Rambam says, Tzarach Adam lehischaber letzadikim. A person needs to make a choice who they are going to surround themselves with. It's not easy to make those choices. It comes at a tremendous price sometimes, where we separate ourselves from those who are not going to be a positive influence on us, who are not going to share the same values as we do. It's not always so easy. Your child is invited for a play date. You don't want your child being in that environment. It's not easy to say no all the time. What do you say to the other person without being disrespectful? How do I shield my child properly? How do I shield myself from having these kinds of friends? It's not always so easy. Sometimes we get dragged in and our whole perspective begins to change. And we've all seen it. And the Rambam says, it's nothing to feel bad about. This is derech b'yasur shel adam. It doesn't mean that you're a weak person. It just means you are a person. And this is nature for a person to want to feel a connection to other people. But you have to make a choice, says the Rambam. The choice needs to be made, who am I going to surround myself with that I'm going to have the least obstacles possible for the kind of house and the kind of life that I want to build? The truth is, The Medrash already makes mention of this comment. I'm freezing. Is anyone else cold? I say this every week. I went to the office before. I am so cold. I don't know. So the Pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei. Pasuk says in Mishlei, Holech el chachamim yechkam. That was just an advertisement. Holech el chachamim yechkam. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, somebody who goes to a chacham will become smart. And the Medrash wonders, is that really the way it works? If I hang around Albert Einstein long enough, I'll become a genius, a brilliant scientist. By osmosis, just by diffusion, that's the way it works? Of course not. We know that's not the way it works. So what does it mean? So let's give an example, the Medrash says. I'm sure all of us have been to an airport, and I'm sure you've gone into the convenience stores and walked around, and I'm sure you've never bought any of those perfumes. But you walk around. Why do you walk around? Because it's nice. You look what they have, and somebody next to you is spraying this, taking a sample of that. And you walk out of the store, and what happens? Aside from the fact that you have nothing in your bag, you smell very good because you were hanging around the store that had very positive smells, very positive aromas. Even though when you walked out, you didn't purchase a bottle of that perfume, but you smell good. And it's a positive experience. Says the Medrash, Mashal Lemisha Nichnas Lechanuso Shalbosem. Doesn't talk about the airport. But somebody walks into a store where they sell perfume. Afal pi she'enu mukar lo ve'enu lokach, she'enu mocher lo ve'enu lokach, mimenu you don't buy, you don't take out your credit card, you're not going to spend money on this. Still, hu yotze v'recho v'reach v'gada mevusamin, ve'en recho zaz mimenu kalayom. When you get on that flight, you're going to smell great, even though it's an hour later, because you were spending time around things that smelled positive. And in the opposite direction, he writes, if you have someone who works in a profession where they're around things that don't smell so positive all the time. You have somebody who is a garbage collector. So they can take a shower and they can wash their clothing. But in the end of the day, if this is what they're doing all the time, at some point, they're not going to be able to get the smell off of them. If you have somebody who's a painter, obviously they don't have a bad aroma, but their hands are always going to be dirty because they're always painting, they're always fixing, they're always doing things. At some point, it doesn't even bother them. They don't even realize. But says the Medrash, Mashal le'echad shenichnas tachanuso shaburski. If you have somebody who walks into a blacksmith, and his hands are always going to be black because you're always working with the metal, and you're melding, and you're doing things, it's going to be very hard to get that off because of the nature of the environment that you surround yourself with. And your hands are going to be dirty and soiled and stained all the time. And that's why, the Medrash says, we have an assumption that holech el chachamim yechkam. Somebody who goes and spends time and surrounds themselves with such positive influences, in the end you'll walk out and you'll smell differently, you'll think differently, you'll act and behave differently. It's just the way it is. And that's so natural, because all of us are influenced by the people who we surround ourselves with. I remember a few years ago when I went to the Space Center in Texas. I was in Houston with my children, so we decided to go there. And I was reading a lot of the things on the walls, which I guess nobody really does. They want to see the space shuttle. But I was just taking pictures of different things that I was reading that I found interesting. And I read something there that said, just caught my eye. The astronaut Scott Kelly returned to Earth after spending 340 days at the International Space Station. So what happened when he came back? Kelly was unable to exit the space vehicle himself and needed assistance because his body was not used to the gravity on Earth. He spent 340 days in a different universe, in a different climate, in a different atmosphere. His body needed 45 days to once again readjust to living life here on Earth. And what I took out of that is exactly what this Rambam says, that the effect that an environment can have on a person is overwhelming. You lived 40, 50 years of your life here on Earth. Take a person out of this experience for less than a year, for 340 days, and it takes them 45 days to reorient, because you have to undo all that the body became used to. And it's very difficult. But that's life. And that's the way it goes. Rav Dessler, one of the great Balei Machshava of the last 100 years, he passed away in 1953. If you look here at number Vav, he writes something that is very, very important. And I think about it often, where he says that when we're raising children, we're so careful about what kind of influences we want them to have. We want them to be friends with these kind of kids and with those kind of families and don't go on a play date here and don't hang out there. And we're very vigilant and we're careful, at least we should be, for what kind of influences we expose our children to. And yet, he says, as we become adults, we seem to believe that we are immune to all the problems that we were worried about for our children, not realizing that we are just as easily influenced as our children are. And just because we've matured and become adults doesn't mean that suddenly we are not going to be impacted by the people we surround ourselves with. So he writes as follows, B'nei Adam Choshvin, people mistakenly think, Shehashpaz Hasviva Ose Roshim Chashuv. People think that it only makes a profound impact Al Yiladim Mechalushe Hadas, on people who are weak, on children whose minds are a little bit more fragile, maybe they're a little bit more flimsy in their thought, and they're still molding their thought process and which direction they want to take in life. Aval Eino Ken, he says, it's not true. Hasviva Ose Roshim Afilu Al Hachi Gadol. You can be an independent, you can be mature, you can be a very confident and capable person, and yet you need to realize that your surroundings make an impact on your perspective as well. And there's no difference between children and adults in this regard. Noraz le'ishtome me'erech ha'svivav. Im adam iskarev el'sviva she'inena chazaka kol kach v'avodas Hashem. If you have a person who surrounds themselves with people who are really not focused on living a life of spiritual growth, on aspirational growth, you can have the best of intentions, the shame shamayim mamish, mikal makom, kvar yesh bazeh haskama bikrav levava levater ktsas al hanhago be'avodaso, ulekabo ktsas mikulas hasviva shaholech etzla. And he just encourages us as adults to think about what it is that we choose to surround ourselves with. And it's not a conversation that is only relevant to children. It's a conversation that is important for adults as well to consider and to think about. The Rambam has a very surprising comment in Hilchos Ishus. Hilchos Ishus is all about the laws that govern relationships, marriage and divorce, and everything that one needs to know about those relationships. And the Rambam, at one point, discusses what the Gemara talks about in Maseches Ksubos. What happens when you have a relationship? Maybe it started off very well. When they got married, they had the same kinds of values. And at some point down the line, things are not really so aligned anymore. So obviously we know that a husband has to pay his wife iksuba. That's what he signed up to when he got married. And if he's going to get divorced, if she asks for a divorce, or if he chooses to divorce her, whatever it may be, she's entitled to iksuba. So unfortunately, we know divorces happen. And the iksuba's obviously paid. It needs to be paid. My father always makes a point when he's at a wedding, and he's the Masada Kedushin, to explain to the young man what exactly the iksuba is. It's very nice you have a bunch of Aramaic words that you are reading, or that somebody is reading under the chuppah, but do you realize this is a very serious obligation? It's a tremendous commitment. A ksubah is not just a few dollars, it's a very large commitment in our society today, and we need to be aware of that. And that's a husband's obligation to his wife. So the Gemara then gives a number of situations where perhaps a ksubah would not have to be paid. And that's very uncommon, it's very unusual. When would a ksuba not have to be paid? So the Gemara says, if it's clear and obvious beyond the shadow of a doubt that the woman is the one who is responsible for destroying and disintegrating the marriage, then the ksuba would not have to be paid. We need to get divorced, but it's your problem that we're getting divorced, and therefore I would not have to pay. Now that doesn't mean if one spouse or the other has a medical condition and therefore they're unable to have children and they feel they need to part ways, it doesn't mean it's the woman's fault or the wife's fault. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fault. That's the way the Ribono Shel Olam made you. And of course, in that situation, a ksuba will have to be paid. But what we're talking about here is, if you have a situation where it's very clear, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that you were the one who caused the disintegration of this marriage. For example, a woman has an affair. Of course, they have to get divorced. They're not allowed to remain married together. Is she entitled to a ksuba? No. Why? Because she's the only reason why you're getting divorced right now. So let's see. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus a very interesting halacha. Let's turn to the second side of the page, where we'll see this, where we will not see this Rambam. Okay, I didn't put it on here. So the Rambam writes as follows. Let's say you have a couple, everything's going fine, nobody's doing anything wrong, everyone's behaving the way they're supposed to, there's no infidelity at all, they're a wonderful marriage, everything's great. No one's even thinking in their wildest dreams about a divorce. Why would you think about such a thing? But then the Rambam says, one spouse or the other stands up and says, you know, any darba mother hazeh, I cannot continue to live in this community. Mipnei shebnei adam raim o prutzim o akum b'shchunasi v'ani misyar mehem. Because there are inappropriate influences that are coming in from the community that we chose to live in. And it's true. We chose this community together. When we first got married, we decided this is the right place for us. It's appropriate. It's the right place to send our children to school. But as the years have now progressed, I, meaning the husband or the wife, feel that this is no longer the appropriate place for us. The community has shifted in the wrong direction, or maybe we have shifted, and this is no longer an appropriate influence for us. The Rambam says, Shomen lo. You listen to the spouse who says that. And even if it means that you're going to have to get divorced because your spouse does not want to move with you, says the Rambam, the spouse who chooses not to come along is responsible for destroying the marriage, which is fascinating. I would have said it's counterintuitive. I would have said the one who woke up on the wrong side of the bed and decided this community is no longer for us, we need to get out of here, you're destroying the marriage. When we got married, we decided this is where we're going to live, this is where we're going to raise our children. You decided now that you want to change course? That's your problem. I don't want to move with you. So who should be considered at fault for destroying this marriage? The Rambam says it's the spouse that doesn't want to go along and make the change. That's the one who's responsible, which is fascinating. V'chein hisha amar kein. The Rambam says if a wife says, afal pi shehu omer, ani eni makpid aleihem. The husband says, what do you mean? You think this is having an impact on me? I'm a strong person. I'm fine. It doesn't matter. The community is shifting in the wrong direction, but it doesn't matter. Shomin la, we listen to her, b'pnei shehi omeres, because she says, ein ritzoni sheyetze alai shem ra b'shchunos elu. Even if she feels it's not having an impact on us, but she says, I don't want to associate with such people. I don't want to be identified or classified with such people. I don't want people saying, oh, you live in that community? With all that goes along with that assumption? I don't want it. And a woman says, as a result of that, we're going to move? If the husband doesn't choose to move along with her, he's responsible for ruining the marriage, not her. Very powerful comment of the Rambam. In fact, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that there are a number of things where they are incrementally corrosive, the Rambam says. It's not something that is so obviously negative, so obviously terrible. It's something that a person may not notice as life experience is playing out. It's something that a person may not notice is actually destroying their life. And the Rambam says, this is one of the things that we refer to as mima'akve ha'tshuva. There are certain things that hold a person back from doing tshuva. Why? Because you don't even realize that there's anything wrong with them. It's easier to do tshuva for something that is such an obvious mistake. What's much harder sometimes is when a person does something that is questionable and maybe not so noticeable. So it's very hard to change my ways when that's what we're dealing with because I don't even realize that there's anything wrong with my behavior or with my action. So the Rambam here writes a short list of things that are going to be mime'akve ha'tshuva. And he says, somebody who speaks lashon hara or rechilus, you don't realize how damaging, how corrosive that is. And maybe because you don't realize it, you therefore will not really stop yourself from engaging in that kind of activity. The Rambam says a bal chema, someone who has a temper, someone who gets angry very quickly. So each time it happens, maybe you don't realize. But you don't realize the effect that it has on your children and the people you interact with. And over time, it is so corrosive. And says the Rambam, when you're sitting down Erev Rosh Hashanah, at least we should, sit down every so often and make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, one of the things that comes to mind is not going to be, you know, I'm such an angry person, I need to change that. Because you don't even realize how destructive that character trait is. But the Rambam has the last in the list of ma'akve ha-tshuva is, ha-mischaber l'rasha mepnei shehu lomed mimaisa v'hein nirshamim belibo. When you have someone who cooperates with the wrong kinds of people. And the Rambam says you don't realize over time what that does to you. Look at what happens to a company, right? Somebody works for a company and they want to be a good employee and you want to make money and you want to make a parnasa, and you get dragged into things. Maybe you don't even realize it. You go along with some kind of scheme, with some kind of scandal. In the end, the government catches up with you. And you start kicking yourself. I'm not a bad person. I didn't want to do this. The company was involved in all this kind of shady business. I just worked for them. I didn't really want to be a part of it. And of course, you didn't want to be a part of it. But you didn't realize when it was the appropriate time to say, my values come before my parnasa. What I stand for in life has to be the priority. And that needs to be the first thing that I think about. And if it means that I need to break away and I need to separate myself from this kind of industry because there's just something not kosher about it, there's something that doesn't sit right with me, then that's what I need to do. And it's a courageous thing for a person to do, and it's very difficult for someone to do that. Let's not forget, Avraham Avinu had asara nisyonos. Avraham Avinu had 10 different challenges, 10 different tests throughout his life. And we know that these were very significant challenges. Avraham Avinu was told to perform the Akedah. Avraham Avinu was told many different things. And one of the 10 that is listed is Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Mimolatetecha. Means it's not easy. You can be Avraham Avinu and it's not easy to pull yourself away from a negative influence. That is considered to be on par with all the other nisyonos, with all the other 10 tests that Avraham Avinu was given. How can it be? You say the Akedah in the same sentence, in the same paragraph as Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. God tells you to leave your house and go to a different location and rededicate your efforts to do something else. The answer is yes. That is painfully difficult for a person to have the strength, to have the fortitude, to stand up and say, this community is not right for me. This influence is not positive for me. I need to take my family and move somewhere else and recreate my life and do something new. This is not the right place for me. I felt it so profoundly this Shabbos. I spoke in Livingston, New Jersey this Shabbos, and I had an opportunity to meet the community and be inspired by them, and something that was so deeply inspiring to me, and I hope to bring them for a Shabbos. I didn't discuss it with anyone here yet, but I hope they'll agree that this is important. There was a couple over Shabbos who came over to talk to us. There were a couple in their 60s. They're actually mechutanim of someone here in the shul. And the story is amazing. When the war broke out in Ukraine, they sent an email to a government agency and they said, we're a couple, we're 60 years old, we have no children left in the house, our children are married, living on their own, and we're happy to adopt someone from Ukraine who wants to come to the United States and live in our house. They had no idea where it was going to land them. They didn't want to say, we only want a Jew, but of course they only wanted a frum person in their house. How are they going to deal with some? Not because they didn't care for the others, but how are they going to have somebody who doesn't keep kosher in the house? So they wrote, in the email that they sent, they wrote just a small line, a kosher home is important to us. And they thought that that was a good enough way to say what kind of person they wanted. The very next day, their email was responded to. They were put on a Zoom call with a young couple in Ukraine, a religious couple who had gotten married a year before. The husband was a full-time practicing dentist, had a practice of his own. The wife worked in the local JCC, or the equivalent, whatever it is in their community in Ukraine. And this couple really wanted to get out and wanted to come to America. This family said yes. They wrote out a check for them to be able to fly to the United States. The story is miraculous because, as we know, they were making every able-bodied man stay behind to fight in the war efforts. I hope they'll come for Shabbos and you'll be able to hear the story on your own. I told them that I think on the anniversary of this war breaking out, I would love both couples to come for Shabbos and share their story together because it's so inspiring and so amazing. They came to America. This woman was 6 months pregnant. She had a baby in this person's home. They had no insurance. They have no passport. They have no anything. They're not American citizens. And this couple has been tending to their needs, doing everything for them. The community has rallied behind them. They are now regular members of the community there, trying to figure out what to do. For him to become a dentist here, he would have to go back to school for 2.5 years and then take the boards again. Aside from the fact that he can't afford it, for him to bring himself to do that is very, very difficult. We had a meal Friday night together with the whole community. There were over 200 people who came to this meal. It was amazing. And this couple was there, sitting like everybody else, just totally integrated. Everyone was passing their child around. This kid had his bris and his Shalom Zachar in Livingston, New Jersey, thousands of miles away from any life that they ever envisioned. And I engaged this couple in conversation as well. I don't want to take away from the tremendous inspiration that the couple in New Jersey was to me, but I was equally as inspired by this couple who had the strength to get out and the insight to understand that we need to leave immediately. They dropped everything. And I said to them, you know, what's with your families? Where are they? And they said, to be honest, our families are stuck behind. They were given the opportunity to leave multiple times, and they can't bring themselves to do it. They can't bring themselves to do it. They're afraid of the unknown, just as we were. They don't know what's going to be. They have a false hope of what they still have in Ukraine. They think that their bank accounts are still there for them. Who knows what's going to be after this war is over? They said, our parents are in their upper 60s. What are they going to do? They're going to come here and recreate a life with no money, with no vision, with no future. And I was struck by that struggle that they have. That a person can look death in the face. They're coming to a freezing cold winter. When we talk about Siberia and Ukraine, and we talk about how cold it is, have you been reading the news that many, many of the electric power lines in Ukraine have been bombed out? People are experiencing the freezing winter of Russia with no heat. And you have the opportunity to get out. And you've been given the opportunity multiple times to get out. And now that your child is becoming an American citizen, it's easier to get their parents out. And still, the parents have told them they just can't do it. And this is Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Mimolatetecha. This is what it is. It's painstaking for a person to have the ability to do that, to leave everything behind and to say, I'm going to rebuild a life and do everything new and leave the culture and community aside because this is the right thing for me to do. It takes a tremendous amount of fortitude and strength for someone to have that kind of vision. The Chovos HaTalmidim, which was written by the Piasetzner Rebbe, he obviously was very famous for being a tremendous personality in the Shoah and the Holocaust, and many of his drushas were printed. And he writes extremely personally. And he writes here, Oy vavoy la ish kazeh, asher masar es nafsho v'gufo b'rshus v'das anashim acherim nishchasim. We allow ourselves to put our decision-making processes into the hands of others. Kocham moshlem alav. We let other people influence the decisions that we make. So I know I can't afford a vacation, but all my friends are going on that vacation, so I'm going to go anyway, but I can't pay for it. I know I can't afford to make this bar mitzvah. I know it's going to put me in debt, but I'm going to do it anyway. Why are you doing it? Why? Have some courage to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. Maybe it's appropriate for someone else, or maybe it's inappropriate for other people. Maybe these bar mitzvahs are not right for anyone. But it's certainly not right for me. If I can't afford it, if I'm not paying my yeshiva tuition, then I shouldn't be making a bar mitzvah in a hotel. No, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. If I'm taking community handouts for different things in my life, then no, I should not be doing this. It's absolutely wrong. I cannot go on that vacation. It's just wrong. But how do I allow myself to do it? Because I'm allowing other people's decisions to be the determining factor in my decision-making process. And says the Piasetzner Rebbe, Hayeled bekatnuso, when a young child is developing, Misragel limdot es kol devarav b'minhage v'das hagufanim hasovev imoso. How does a child learn to navigate life? A child learns to navigate life by looking around at what other people are doing, and they copy. So you sometimes see a child dressing up as a parent. It looks funny, but they do it because that's what they see other people doing. That's the way a child makes all their decisions. It's the way they come to an understanding of life because they have no other way to learn. Their only way to know how to do what's right or wrong, how to make the next move in life, is by looking around at what other people are doing. And that's why it's so important that when dealing with a child, You present them with an opportunity to learn from people who are doing positive things. But he says, how sad is it? Are we as adults any different? We look to what other people are doing and we make decisions based on what other people are doing. So we're just overgrown children, he writes. What's the difference? We're meant to be mature. As our minds develop, we have the ability to make our own decisions and to make our own choices. But it's very hard to do that. And he says, when you think about it and you break it down, we're really not that different than the way a child learns to develop. A child looks around and mimics the behaviors that they see from the adults around them. And we look around and we mimic the behaviors of the adults we see around us as well. And that is a great challenge. And that is a difficult decision for a person to be able to make. So, while at the same time we say that we need to surround ourselves with positive influences, and we need to know that it's important for us to set up ourselves for success, at the same time, there's a delicate balance, as we said before, that needs to be struck here. Because if we're not going to have a seat at the table, if you look at society and you say, you know, I've given up, and there's nothing I can do to positively influence anything around me. And you know what? A government is so corrupt wherever you may live. I don't want to be a part of it. Well, that's a decision that you can make. And you don't like this law that they're passing, and you disagree with that law that they're passing, and it just doesn't sit well with your values. But if you don't have a seat at the table, how are things going to look then? And this was a great debate over the last 100 years. The great leaders of our people grappled with how to properly respond to the modern-day challenge and gift of Eretz Yisrael. As we know, the land of Israel, in modern-day Israel, was started and was populated by atheists, by people who had no belief in God at all, who wanted to have nothing at all to do with the religion. They were into Zionism, they weren't into Judaism. And the problem was, do we do shituf pu'ula? Do we join forces together with them that at least we can have some kind of influence, some kind of impact? Or do you say, absolutely not? We cut the cable, we cut the cord, we want to have no connection at all because this is something that's going to negatively impact my life. And that's the debate, that is the discussion that has been an ongoing discussion. One very fascinating personality who spoke about this was Rabbi Sefer Teichtel, who wrote the Sefer Eim HaBanim Smecha. Eim HaBanim Smecha was a Sefer that was written in the 1940s, and it's a fascinating work because it's all about the love of the land of Eretz Yisrael and encouraging people to go to Eretz Yisrael and to be a part of the movement in that time, to be a part of building the land of Eretz Yisrael. But what's fascinating about it is that Rabbi Sacher Teichtel grew up in a community where they were complete anti-Zionists. He was a Talmud of the Munkacher Rebbe. The Munkacher Rebbe was very open about his feelings about everything that was going on in Israel. And through his experiences in the war, Rabbi Sacher Teichtel said he feels that this was a mistake, that the whole Hashkafa was wrong. And for us to just shun all of those who do that and to have no connection at all to what they are doing makes the situation worse, not better. It means there's never a possibility for anything to become more positive because we have no voice. We have no seat at the table. And he encourages people, members of his generation, to think about the mistakes that he feels he grew up with, and to learn from those mistakes, and to structure their lives differently. While at the same time we try to protect ourselves and surround ourselves with the right kinds of people, at the same time it's important that at some points, in some experiences, we do what needs to be done in order to be able to have a positive impact and a positive influence. As mentioned, it's not always so easy to figure out what that line is. And in the days of the Yevanim, as we celebrate Hanukkah, we think about the fact that there was Hellenism all around. There were so many that were assimilating. It means they did not strike the proper balance. It means they did not understand how to make the right decision and the right choice. But it's a constant struggle that has been ongoing since that time. This is nothing that has left us from the Hanukkah story. This is something that we continue to struggle with. It's something we continue to try to find the right balance for. And it's something that Hanukkah gives us the opportunity to think about. While we live here in the United States, while we live here in Gullis, while we engage with the world, while we're a part of society, while we talk to our politicians, while we get involved and all that goes on, it's a very complicated thing. Just think 2 weeks ago, right? When our government on December 12th passed the Marriage Act, which obviously is antithetical to everything we believe in, there was a very interesting philosophical debate between the Aguda and the OU. And I think both points of view are very valid and very interesting. So the OU supported the bill. You can say, how can they support such a bill? It's horrible. And they were attacked mercilessly, Ben Shapiro and everybody else attacking them. How can it be? And the answer is, think about why they did it. Why don't you call them up and ask them, why did you do such a thing? You think they forgot about the pasuk in Chumash that says this is a toeva? No, they didn't forget. So what's the rationale? The rationale is that they said, if we are not going to have some kind of involvement in the bill, we will never be able to have the government write a clause which is protective of religious institutions. So imagine what's going to happen. This passes into law, and then somebody's going to come to me as a rabbi and say, I'd like you to officiate at my wedding when this is the kind of wedding that it's going to be. I can then get sued for saying no. But now that there's a clause that protects me, I now have a right to say, based on my religious beliefs, I am not going to be a part of this wedding, and that's fine. And the law protects me. So, had we chosen not to be involved in the discussion, no clause would have been made. Because we chose to, yes, be involved in the discussion, that is why we were able to protect ourselves. Now, don't walk away with the mistaken impression and think that that means we support this bill. Of course we don't. Now, the Aguda felt it's a chilul Hashem to have your name on such a thing in the first place. How can you be connected to it at all? And if it means down the line we're going to be sued, and if it means down the line we're going to have to deal with it, then we'll deal with it. We'll go to a lawsuit. But you cannot put your name on such a thing. And I think both perspectives are very valid. And what they're both trying to do is thread the needle. Try to figure out, how much do we get involved in order to have some kind of positive influence on all that's going on around us? And how much do we say, no, we can absolutely have nothing to do with this because this is totally anathema, totally antithetical to everything that we believe in as Jews. And that is the constant struggle of the Jewish community. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to this. And I don't think it's right that one community or the other attacked the decision that the leadership made. I think both leadership positions made a decision that made a lot of sense. I know that sounds contradictory, but there can be two perspectives that are both correct. And I think they're both very interesting to consider, to talk to our spouses about, to talk to our families about. What would you have done if you're in a leadership position? I'm happy not to be the one making this decision, but I think it's a very difficult decision to make. When we live in a complicated world and we live in a society where we do have influences that are coming at us from all sides, and they are very often very, as we said, antithetical to what we believe in, what is our approach supposed to be? That is something that the story of Hanukkah gives us the opportunity to think about, something that it gives us the chance to consider, and something that it gives us the opportunity to think about in our own personal lives. Forget about the greater good of Klal Yisrael. Forget about major decisions that need to be made on a macro level. Think about on a micro. Think about in my own life, what kind of influences I'm able to perhaps shun and push away, what kind of influences I should try to welcome, how I should be having my family and my community think about issues, how I should try to encourage my children to challenge themselves, but at the same time, to think and surround themselves with the kinds of people that are going to help them make the right decisions and choices as they navigate their own lives. So I wish everyone